Welcome to Buzzing About Romance, everybody. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm welcoming author Kate Golden. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Kate Golden is a USA Today bestselling author of both The Sacred Stones and Harker Academy trilogies. When she isn't writing, she is an avid book reader, puzzle addict, and game night enthusiast. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband and their puppy, Milo. So I do have to ask, what
Yes.
kinds of games do you guys do? Tabletop games or...
All, any and all. I mean, yes, love a tabletop game, love like a, Scrabble, just me and my husband, or Code Names or Wavelength with friends. But also, like, we'll do, I don't know if you've ever heard of like Avalon. It's kind of like Mafia or Werewolf, those games that are kind of like everybody pretends to be something, like those kind of
Oh,
games.
okay, yeah. Almost
Also,
like
we like
for
escape
me.
rooms, bowling, any kind of like competitive social activity is so enjoyable to me.
I like a tabletop game. Like,
Yeah.
I'm very competitive, and my oldest is very competitive. Like, when it
Oh
comes to gaming,
my
like, when in his sports life, not so much, but like tabletop
gosh, fun.
games, he gets very intense, and so it can lead to tears in our house.
Oh my gosh.
I
Well,
mean.
then you have certain games you have to avoid, like the ones that really bring out the worst in people. I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
I know, sorry. I mean, when they were younger, I mean, I still like a good game of Sorry, but Sorry, if he
Oh
didn't,
yeah.
tears would always happen.
My in-laws get real intense about Monopoly. Like, if we're gonna play Monopoly, like there are going to be feuds that will last the weekend.
My husband, like the hotels, the, oh
Oh
man,
yeah.
it's crazy.
People can just be ruthless. They're like, I'm going to take you for everything you're worth. And you're like, you are my blood relative. What's going on?
Like the true feelings sometimes come out in game
Yeah, it's intense. It's therapeutic, cathartic, some might say.
night. So, why a writer?
Oh, great question. Right off the bat. I did not plan it. So I can't tell. There was no kind of like, intention of like, oh, this would be a great career. Like, this is something that I've always wanted to do. I kind of tripped and fell into this in the most kind of unexpected way. I mean, I've always loved stories and storytelling. My parents both work slash worked. My mom's retired, but in film and television. So, just in general, like movies, books, TV, stories, poetry, whatever, like was always a big part of my life and my childhood. And I was always a huge reader, so just loved books, devoured them. Thought, occasionally like maybe I'd go into publishing, but I didn't. I didn't live in New York, so I sort of like had no connection to that world. And then later in life, after I had started a totally different career, it was the pandemic, and I, like a lot of people, was, pretty bored. Like my job had sort of like stalled out in a lot of ways. We were all just kind of, I was working in a movie studio and we weren't making movies. So I was kind of just sitting around waiting for the pandemic to end, kind of like going over old material that was not going to get made anytime soon. And was reading up a storm and was on a vacation with my husband and couldn't get into any of the books I brought. And he suggested that I try to write the thing that I wish the books were, because I kept saying, why doesn't this have this? Or I would love this if it had this element, or I just keep waiting for this to happen, but it's not happening. And so my husband was like, it sounds like you know exactly what you want to be reading, but it doesn't exist. Like, you should just write it. Or maybe it did exist, but I had read every iteration of it already. I had like
But that
exhausted.
specific like direction you wanted to go,
Yes.
you did not find.
Yes. And so I honestly just wrote the book for fun. I love a project. I love like a creative, like, oh, I'm gonna whatever, plan my wedding or do my dream reno of this bathroom that I could never afford. Like, I love a like imaginary, project or whatever. Started working on this story and it brought me such an incredible amount of joy. I was amazed that I was like 28 and had not experienced that feeling yet. And then at that point, I had a finished book and I was like, what do we do from here? And it kind of went from there.
So, how, when you're writing, do you plan out your storyline or do you pants it?
No, I'm an incredibly aggressively type A. The thought of pantsing anything, the thought of pantsing any element of my life is horrifying. Everything is meticulously planned, probably, surely to my detriment, to my book's detriments. I mean, every book has like a chapter by chapter full written outline, like a full, multi-paragraph for every
You're not
chapter.
the only one.
I love to hear that. That makes
So
me feel way better.
let me tell you this, Mariah Enkinman, she is a very meticulous plotter, like plans it out, outlines everything. But she actually, the past couple years, started using like a screenwriting like format in the way that she plots her books now. So
Brilliant.
you're not alone, but she is very meticulous about everything as well. So you.
I mean, I think that you either kind of, at the end of the day, I think, or I hope so much of what we're doing as writers is coming from this place of like pleasure and joy and passion. It's like when you're sitting down and writing, hopefully that's just like the most fun. That's the thing you really want to be doing. And for me, the outlining stage is such a huge part of that. That's where I get to, take all my ideas, see what sticks, and there's no pressure to make the writing, flowy or write any dialogue. I get to just sort of like pitch out the story that I want to tell. And so I think like the idea of trying to go write that story while also balancing, sentence structure and have I used this word too many times? And well, let me take a beat here and describe the scene, set the scene, build the tension. I think it would come out, it would just end up, the book would read like an outline. Do you know what I mean? I would be so rushed and so interested in just being like, well, then this happens, this happens, this happens. So actually, I think in the long run, I'm hoping that by meticulously outlining, it allows me to sort of like get all of that out. And then when I sit down to write the book, I can really take my time. But it definitely sometimes, I stick so rigidly to the outline in the first draft that it requires usually a bigger rewrite because eventually your characters start to deviate and change. And if you're like, no, you're going to do what the outline says, people end up doing things that are totally inorganic and they wouldn't do. And then in your rewrite, you're like, uh-oh. So I've accepted that that's part of the journey for me.
It's funny you mentioned like using a word too much. So I do edits also. Like I edit and dev edit and proofread and all that stuff. I have a couple clients where I like to do a word count on a specific word to see how many
Oh my
words
God.
in the book.
Brutal, but needs to be done.
Oh, but
I do that
I don't
too.
typically share that just for
Oh. No,
curiosity.
you have to tell them. We got to know these things.
Well, so we have a friend who is also an author. Her name is Merit. She lives in the Netherlands. So English is her second language. She's a big fan of the word and. I mean, since she has been writing more, she's gotten better and like she notices it. But the first couple books, there were so many ands. And she's like, I just put it in there. And it's like, English is your second language. Like, it is okay.
No, but you know what? English is my first language, and I struggle with that because sometimes, you're writing a sentence and you're like, oh, whatever, this is gonna be a terrible, terrible example. But like, you'd be like, there was something mischievous and, darkly compelling about his grin. And then you're like, just pick one. Was it a mischievous grin or was it a darkly compelling grin? Like, you don't actually need the and, but on that first pass, you're just like getting everything out. I tend to just like over describe and then I have to go back and sort of like pick my descriptor or pick what I want the sentence to be doing.
But the upside to that though is like you can pick the better of the two. Like in that moment,
Yeah.
you're like, oh, this one or this one might work. Let me just drop them both in there. But like in the moment,
Yeah.
oh, this one definitely, like it gives it more oomph in this moment.
Totally. I do when I do, a reread, I keep like a log, in whatever, like the notes that I keep up on the side of the doc of words that I've just overused. Because in the moment, as I'm rereading, I'm not going to take the time to edit them later. I'll just start to note, like, okay, I've said wicked 90 times. Like, not everything in this book is wicked or like cruel or like, whatever. Somebody will have pale hair. So I use the word like moonlight 100 times to describe it. And it's like, okay, we gotta. But it's so funny to like look at that list at the end and see like all the words I overused. And I'm like, this is almost like a word cloud of what my book is trying to, of like the vibes of my book. It's like, okay, wicked, cruel, moonlight, got it. But then I have to go through and do a lot of synonym, a lot of thesaurusing for sure.
I like a good thesaurus.
Love a good thesaurus. We need them.
So, are you currently reading anything?
Yes, slowly, because I'm on deadline and I don't read a lot when I'm actively drafting. It's probably when I like read the least out of the year. But I am reading, this is sort of embarrassing because it's such a throwback, but I'm reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo
Oh, really?
because, yeah, because I'm a huge thriller reader. I love a good thriller. And that was one that tragically, at whatever time in my life the movie came out, I went and saw the movie with people before I had ever read the book. And then forever, I was like, well, I don't read the book because I've seen the movie. And I've gotten to a place now where maybe because I'm getting older. Oh, what'd you say?
They're different.
Okay, well, also, I feel like I've forgotten everything that happened in the movie. Like, I can't even remember the premise. And I was like, I guess that means it's time I get to read the book. I'm like halfway through the book and I still don't remember anything about the movie. So I'm glad that I waited and the time finally came. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, and I am a type of person who, I mean, not as much when I was younger, but now that I'm older, if something's really popular, like I will not read it. And I will not watch
So
it. Like
fair.
I have the I mean, I'm undiagnosed in a lot of things that I think I have, but like oppositional defiance disorder is definitely something that
Wow.
in certain things, not in everything, but in certain things, like it is hardcore. Like
How
heated
funny.
rivalry is a big thing right now. Like I'm like, I will watch it eventually, but I'm not watching it right now.
Wait, that's so funny. No, but you know what? I am right there with you. Sometimes I'm not sure where the instinct comes from, but I almost just feel like there's too much pressure. It's like these are the things I do for my own personal enjoyment, and if suddenly they are like everywhere all the time and everyone wants to talk about it, I can't kind of just like dig it on my own. You know what I mean? I don't know what that is, but
Like,
I'm
I've
right
been
there with
telling
you. It took me
people,
forever to read Fourth Wing. I'm behind on
I
like
haven't
every
read that.
popular show.
I
I'm
love
on Fourth
Rebecca.
Wing.
She is a wonderful human being. Like, she is a delightful person to talk to. And I have read a lot of her books, but I have not read that one yet. Like, I can't.
I get it. It's like it's hard. The hype. You ever go see like a spectacular movie
And
and
it's
then once it
horrible.
becomes, well, yeah, it's like I think
You're
all the
like one
time
of the
about,
few.
yeah, no, it's such a real thing. I think about how lucky I was. I feel very, very, very lucky. I saw Get Out opening weekend on a whim, knowing nothing about the movie, with people who are like, let's just go see something scary, it'll be fun. And got to be like, is this one of the greatest things that's ever been made? Had I seen it once everyone had said, this is the greatest thing that's ever been
And you're
made,
like, am I forming that opinion on my own?
I would have been like, I don't know, it's just a good movie. Like, it's so hard. I think that once, like, there's so much hype and everyone's talking about it, it's all over social media and everyone is analyzing something, you can't even really like form your own opinion anymore.
Well, so many people ruin it for you too. It's like,
Yeah,
I mean, I don't
true.
mind a spoiler. I will fully admit that. But like, if I'm going into something that where I don't want it to be spoiled, like I have almost guaranteed to like see something that I shouldn't have. And it's like,
Ugh, always. Trailers alone. Now we're talking about movies, but like the trailer will spoil the movie for you.
a
Sometimes, like,
lot
I
of
don't even
times.
want to watch the trailer.
It's vicious.
Yeah,
So
vicious. I agree.
you have any rituals or habits that help you stay focused and productive when you're writing?
You know, I feel like I'm so boring when I answer this question. Not really. I like to have a full, like, Stanley cup of water nearby. And my AirPods in, and I
When I
like to.
said that, I imagined like the actual Stanley Cup, like Stanley Cup, and I was like, if you need a Stanley Cup, well, that's a lot of water.
Like, literally, I've won the Stanley Cup. No, just that. I guess no one can see this because it's a podcast, but like, just one of these, you know, like hefty guys, and I'll drink my
Not
water.
an
I'll,
in-ball
you know,
cup, but an
what?
actual.
Yeah, not a, yeah, we're
I
not
don't
that
know why
fancy.
my mind went there. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had to.
No, please. I was not going it. That was not going anywhere. I drink water and I put in my AirPods and I like to write early in the morning when nobody will bother me, and that is kind of it. Very boring.
I mean, to each his own.
Yeah.
It's one of the things, like I tell every author that I do these interviews with, like how much I enjoy them because everybody, like the end result is the same. Like you have a
Yeah.
book, a completed book, but the process start to finish is so different and how people get
Yeah.
in the zone and like the way, actually, even the way they write. Like there are authors that dictate and then go through and edit. There are authors who use
Oh.
those little typey things, but it's like the single line. I can't think of what they're.
Yeah. You mean a typewriter?
No, not a typewriter, but
Oh, like,
it's
whoa.
like a keyboard with like two or three lines of text that you can see.
Whoa, no,
And
I don't
so
even know
like
about that.
so they're not distracted. It's not connected to anything.
Wow. Oh, I
Exactly.
can't even
To
imagine.
plug it in, like to upload your story. Like, don't quote me on that because I'm not sure. But like, there's no other like things. Like, there's not really a screen. So, like, there's no distraction. Like, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
But it just fascinates me, like, how there's so many different processes.
And yet we all end up with like, our bookshelf full of books and everyone wrote them differently. It's like
Yes,
so beautiful.
exactly. It is one of my favorite things about these things. Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author
Oh my God, how much time do you have?
you?
Yes, but also no, I don't know. I get a little woo-woo, like things are the way they're meant to be, like the butterfly. Like, I wouldn't want to go back and change anything because it could change everything. But yes, on a more practical level, there are a couple things. I mean, I think this is sort of funny and probably more specific to like fantasy and to writing trilogies or series, but I wrote my first book thinking there would be no other books. I didn't think anyone would read it. I think had I known I was going to write an entire trilogy, I would have been like, don't paint yourself into all of these corners. Like, don't come up with all these like plots and prophecies and things that you're going to have to deliver on later. I think writing the next two books, I like made things harder for myself, than they needed to be. I think also telling myself like there is no right thing, correct thing to write. The first book I ever wrote was just for myself. It was just for fun. And then as once I realized, this was going to be a career and I was, signing a deal with my publisher and starting to think about like, okay, what's the next series or what's the next idea or what are you going to work on? I think I spent a lot of time thinking about like, what does the market want and what's hot and what's going to be popular? What are people clamoring for? And all of those ideas died in some kind of like terrible, disheveled Word doc. And the things I actually ended up writing were just more of the same. It was stuff that I loved and I was excited about. And there was no, guarantee that the market wanted it or anything. So maybe I'd go back and tell a version of myself like, you're only going to succeed at this if you can write the book, and you're only going to be able to write the book if it's something you're excited about. So, I think that maybe. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't know, probably those two things.
No, I think those are great because I think that's the thing. Like, as a reader, like you can definitely tell when an author is not excited about what they're putting out.
Oh, totally. It's so true. I feel very grateful that I'm grateful to my own laziness that I never actually wrote something that I wasn't into, because I cannot imagine, forget the weeks and weeks and months you spend actually drafting the thing and then all the months of editing, but like trying to promo and sell and pitch your book if you are not the biggest champion of your book, that sounds like torture. That's horrible.
But it and it shows too. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, readers are so intuitive. You can feel it. You can feel it when you read the book, even if you haven't, listened to an interview or anything. You can feel if there's not joy in the book.
Oh, definitely. So when you're writing your stories, how do you balance the development of the romantic relationship, which yours goes across like multiple books, so it's a little bit more intense, and with the other elements of the story?
Oh, another great question. Man, I wish I had really excellent answers for these really excellent questions. My best, the truth is I don't have like a here's how you do it, get out your notepad. I have the answers. But I can tell you just at least what I attempt to do, which is trying to, first of all, I try really hard to write a book where if you were to pull either, let's just say fantasy plot or romantic storyline out completely, the book could still stand on its own. So usually that's not happening in the first draft, but as I reread, I'm looking for that. Are there moments or beats where if you lifted one out, the other would completely fall apart? I think that that is something I try to avoid. But I think also I try to look for like what is the reader wanting, like when I go back and I reread that first draft or that second draft or whatever, I'm doing so hopefully with the mind of the reader, not so much the author. And every time, that chapter finishes, or every time there's a sentence and it's like, you wouldn't believe what I was looking at or whatever the next kind of like moment is, I try to read my own, like, am I hoping for a romantic beat? Am I hoping the love interest walks in and there's something tensiony and great and swoony that happens? Or am I like dying to get the next piece of information in this mystery or this fantasy puzzle? Do I want them to encounter another trial or a creature? Is this where I'm hoping the sort of plot is continued and the stakes are heightened? Or do I want something spicy to happen? Or do I want a romantic breakup? And I try to like it's not so much fan service, but to read those like instincts within myself. I also just like read a lot and watch a lot of stories that blend the two. That's my favorite genre. Like in general, I don't love more so, I guess, in television film, but like I find it hard to watch something that is like purely just about the personal relationships that has no, like murder mystery or science fiction or fantasy element. Like my favorite thing is like a Buffy or a Vampire Diaries or a Lucifer,
You
where it's
need that
like,
secondary story.
yeah, exactly. So I think that like also it's the genre I already am into. So yeah, I guess I try to pull from like great romanticy and great fantasy books that have wonderful romantic plots and try to see what worked there and find those same rhythms.
So let's talk Half City, which is your upcoming
Yeah.
release. It is releasing February 17th, 2026, although at the time of release of this podcast, it may already be out.
Fantastic.
So this is book one of the Harker Academy trilogy, and it is an urban fantasy, romanticy, PNR-esque, because there's a little bit of
Yeah.
everything blended in here.
When I try to pitch this, it's word salad. I'm like, it's a paranormal, urban romanticy, dark academia, enemies to lovers, and I can see people like drift off. I'm like, I gotta find the faster way to pitch this. But yes, everything you said is right.
Well, because it has vampires, it has werewolves, it has hunters, but it also is like in a set, like a different world, and like the way the world
Yeah.
is created is like there's different steps to it, and like hidden portals, and all,
Totally.
like there's a little bit of everything in this.
I'm like, it's if Buffy and Ninth House and Crescent City had a baby. Whatever that genre is, that's what this is, I think.
I feel like that's a good description.
Yeah, it's like, there you go. It's got a little something for everybody.
So, what was the inspiration for this world? Was it just those like types of series or?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a confluence, like a couple of things at once. I was finishing my A Dawn of Onyx, that trilogy, the Sacred Stones trilogy, and I mean, I loved writing that. I love those books, but at the time that I was like deep in edits on the third book, there were things about this world I was starting to feel like, man, I really want to write a book with like real enemies to lovers. This was sort of like they think they're enemies, but of course, the more you get to know him, he's actually like the loveliest, whatever. Like there's those kind of like he seems like the Dark Prince, but actually he's like classic book boyfriend. He's wonderful. And I was sort of like, I want to write actual, like these people cannot stand each other, like real enemies. And then I think also I was like craving just some modern pop culture references. I wanted them to have cars and email and text. I was constantly like stuck in a sort of medieval-esque fantasy world and was starting to drive myself a little crazy. And I was also watching Buffy at the time and was like, I love the idea, not so much of, because Buffy actually herself is not like this, but like someone who is almost, I don't know if you're a fan of the show, but more like Faith, but like someone who has this sort of very noble duty, but has like such a dark, like if they weren't doing this, they'd probably be doing something really nefarious and sort of like fighting against that internal kind of turmoil. Meanwhile, my
Definitely
FMC, yeah, totally. Meanwhile, my main character from A Dawn of Onyx was like the kindest, most warm, most like everyone in the world is good, entirely optimistic, and I love her so deeply and I loved writing her, but I was sort of like itching for something new. So all those things kind of came together to create this world, this like fantasy world, but grounded in sort of like our modern times, this kind of darker heroine and this kind of more true enemies to lovers, kind of like long-term love interest. And then, yeah, the actual idea was sort of, I don't know. I wish it sort of came from that. I think at the time I was also working a full-time job, writing books secretly under a pen name, writing at night and then going to the office during the day. And I felt like I had this sort of dark secret because nobody knew. And I felt, I think, some shame because I was like, by day, I help people who are creatives. And I'm always like, I'm not a creative, I'm just your studio exec. And then by night, I was like being a creative myself. And so then I was like, maybe I'll write a character where I can sort of, work through some of those feelings of like wanting to figure out a way to be true to yourself and do the thing you really want to do. And I'm happy to say now I have since quit that job and I write full time. So the book helped me definitely work through some of that, but it was all those things kind of created this character.
Well, but as the story plays out, like We have there's a lot of characters, which the
Yeah.
supporting cast is fantastic. Like there's
Oh, thank
humor,
you.
there's care, there's all of those things that we want in a supporting cast. But there's so many layers to all of them.
Yeah.
Because there's one character we find out, like she is who she is, but she's also somebody else, which I'm
Yeah.
being super vague because we're
No, totally. I appreciate it.
I mean,
That's
that's
like
like
the one thing I'm like, people, yeah, I don't want to spoil it either, and
that's
I'm
a big
scared
spoiler.
I
And what, but when that showed up, I was like, that is an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, it's funny. There is a lot of that thematically, not just in the book, but in the series.
Okay.
Like, are people who they say they are? What is it like to sort of be one person to the outside world and somebody else, on the inside, then what is like the true version of you? I think it's a lot of working through ideas and concepts of like identity, like what makes you who you are. And also I think Viv is working, our main character is working through, so much. I think she really starts the book with a lot of self-loathing, and the hope is sort of by the end of the book, there's some growth there, but really by the end of the series, there's hopefully, if I do my job right, a significant amount of growth there, but that doesn't really happen overnight. So, yeah, everybody, all the characters in some way are sort of working through some kind of like identity crisis.
That self-loathing, but there's also like trying to figure out her self-worth because like her
Yeah.
mom do not have a great relationship, and
Yeah.
like because of things which you have to read about, and
Yeah.
she's just so different from them, and like her lot in life as a hunter, but you find out like her hunter skills are different than other hunters she's meeting, and so it's like
Yeah.
she's really struggling through a lot of this book to figure out like how she can be stop being this lone person even when she has a family, and then this new family that she's kind of creating, and it's like she there's so much like chaos in her head.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think like I don't know if you know people like this or have close friends like this or whatever, but like, and I will candidly say that's not something, this is not something that I personally deal with, but have you ever known someone like, I have a good friend, it's like who's, oh, they kind of are always feeling like they're a loner, no matter how many found families or real families or colleagues or whatever, people who constantly want to be there and show up for them, they have this sort of self-identification of like, I'm on my own, it's easier to be on my own, I'm a lone wolf. And it takes, frankly, a lot of growth and therapy and, care to get to a place where you're like, oh, it doesn't have to be that way. Like, I think that's something that Viv is really dealing with. And it makes sense, again, without spoiling anything, like she has had some serious trauma that has led her to perceive herself and the world this way and to feel like it's not worth getting super close to people. And yet, these people show up in her life, these friends, these love interests, that want to be there for her,
And they keep showing up. I think that's one of
Yeah.
the big things is like she has essentially has tried to isolate herself, but she has
Yeah.
people in her life that continue to show up, and
Yeah.
it's hard for her to accept that they're continuing to show up.
And it's like, no matter how much she's like, I'm a lone wolf, I do things on my own, like
They're like,
she's
no, you're not allowed to.
and she like loves these people, So like, even though she doesn't want to admit it, especially with her new friends, when push comes to shove, she's going to be the first one there when they're struggling. She's like fiercely loyal. So yeah, again, that's another way that she's like battling. It's like this internal battle of like who she thinks she should be versus at the end of the day, who she is, which is someone who like is always going to be there for her friends and the people that she cares about.
There's so much happening in this book, and Viv has been invited to this Harker Academy to learn about more of being a hunter and all those things. And then, but as the story progresses, we like there are students that she meet, they start to disappear, and so there's this whole mystery side to her really coming to terms with who she is at the same time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is, there's a lot, she's balancing a lot, and as a writer, I was, it was my own fault, but I was balancing a lot because, you do have this, coming of age story sort of for Viv and a story of self-worth and self-acceptance. And then you have this, like, as you said, the school, the friends there, this love story, and then also this mystery, the central mystery, because something is something is wrong at this academy, and she is the one that sort of discovers this and has to figure it out with the help of, yes, this enigmatic, broody demon teacher that we haven't quite figured out if he's what his intentions are.
Yeah, there's so much happening in this book, and there's layers and characters on both sides where it's like you have to wonder as a reader, like, how it's all going to come together.
Yes. I will say this. I think one of the things that always really interests me in stories, in fantasy especially, is I'm much more interested in the books where there is more of a complicated, nuanced blend of good and evil rather than the sort of, by the way, not to knock these fantastic series that I love, but like the Lord of the Rings, the Star Wars, the classic good versus evil, like the sort of, that archetype, which is great. I feel like lately, at least, I'm very excited about, and I'm interested in digging into ones where it's like a lot more complex than that, and maybe the answer is somewhere that's a little more gray, or like the world we've been told is not exactly, within the story, the setup we've been told isn't exactly how things are. Which I think is also such a huge part of romanticism, because so often we have these villains that end up being these like wonderful romantic love interests. And it is so much about like, well, where there's darkness, there's light, and we have to sort of look beyond what a person. It's the Beauty and the Beast thing. It's like things are not exactly what they seem. There's, or the Hades Persephone. I think there's something that we all are interested in, in that sort of blend of light and dark. And so, yes, I'm playing with that for sure.
I mean, it's intriguing. I'll tell you that.
I know, I felt bad because also it's like that cliffhanger is brutal, and I'm like, I
Oh
promise
my God, so brutal.
there's more to come, guys.
I like hit that page and I like swiped on my Kindle and I was like, author's notes.
Oh
What?
my God, I know. People have been saying that. I feel so bad. Okay,
Like,
but the good news is the second book, and I can say this because it's like public knowledge now, is out this year.
yeah.
So it's not too terrible.
I mean, for someone who hates a cliffy though,
I'm
like
sorry.
it was rough. Like rough.
I will give you any spoilers you're interested in when
Like
we are done
I
recording.
knew going into it was a cliffhanger. Like Amanda was like, you know, this is a trilogy because I have to have warning. But then
Yeah,
I was
fair.
like, but then I did see when the next book was coming. I was like, I have to wait that long. Like I just, it's a me problem. It is not
I'm
an
here to
anybody
help.
else problem.
I'm here. I will give you, unfortunately, because I also love spoilers. Like if you DM me or something, I probably will give away. Like not everything, not the kitchen sink, but like I know that feeling, and that feeling is so terrible. And if people are like, I just want to know this, or like, am I right about this kind of like basic idea? I usually will do some kind of like very telling emoji or something. But October 13th, it's so soon. It's like 9 months away.
I mean, it's gonna be here before we know
And it's available for pre-order. Like,
it.
gotta do my job as like a, author, being salesy, but I always forget to say that. I'm like, no, it's out in some shape or form. You can't read it yet, but you can find it in the ether.
You can prepare yourself to
Yeah,
read it.
exactly.
But so in this world, we have like the hunters and Harker, and they're like fighting. And then we have the High Thane, who is like the head of like the demons. And we kind of meet him, kind of don't. Well, him maybe, but that leads into the Cliffy that is intense. And there's so many. You're building so many little things that are turning out to be big things.
It's a like a multi sort of a multi cliffy, if you will. Because there's sort of the fundamental story of the mystery of what's going on at the school, which I hope is like somewhat resolved enough by the end of the first book that you're not like, but what was going on at the school? Like you understand what was happening. But that sort of opens the door. Maybe that window closes, but it opens a whole new door to, okay, what, the people who were behind some nasty things, what is their kind of greater plan? That is obviously a huge part of the cliffhanger. And then how does the High Thane, the sort of like king of the demons, if you will, how does he play into this? And his identity is hidden. So who is this person? obviously is another big sort of like question mark that you're left with. But then there's also, again, without giving anything away, our main character goes through a significant experience at the end of the book. And what that means for her going forward is, I'd say, maybe the biggest cliffhanger, but also you have a very significant romantic cliffhanger as well. So it's sort of like you're going into the second book, hopefully with enough answers that like the first book was a satisfying read, but now there's a lot that you are hopefully excited to figure out. And frankly, while I know my cliffhangers are tough and I don't think it's that's like always the norm in a trilogy, you do sort of feel like in this, like, I hate to be like attention deficit world, but I'm speaking to myself. Like, I have no attention span. It's really hard for me to read a book and then remember to come back, a year and a half later for the second one. I do feel like the you kind of need to sort of leave your readers really hanging to get them, and not in a salesy way, like, ooh, to get them to buy the second book, but just like to keep interest enough to tell the story you're trying to tell. Because the thing about a trilogy is it really is a story in three acts, you know? This first book is just the first act of the completed story that I'm so excited about, or that like I want my characters to go on. And I owe it to the readers to get them to the third book. You know what I mean? Otherwise, they didn't get to, they only read a part of the story. So you're kind of like, how in the world do I bridge this gap where I'm giving people a successful read that they like and they're having fun, but also they care enough about what's happening to read the second book. So yeah, hopefully, but it's a hard balance to strike. You know, I feel terrible when people are like, that cliffhanger killed me. I'm like, I'm so sorry. That's probably why
You're
I
like,
give
you're
away all the
welcome.
spoilers.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Oh my God, I never say that. I literally am like, I'll send me your therapy bills. I feel so bad. Because I know I'm a reader. I know how it feels.
Yeah. So what's next? Is the next Harker Academy next, or do you have something else in between?
Yeah, no. So this book, like you said, it's probably out already. This book came out February 17th. And then the second one comes out 9 months later, October 13th. And the third one comes out not too shortly after that. I don't think I'm allowed to say when yet, but
Probably not.
I feel like sleuths can probably put two and two together. But it won't be too long. And then, yeah, that's sort of what's on the horizon currently. I tell people a lot that I, have the intention and have an outline for a spin-off from my first trilogy that follows some secondary characters that we all kind of fell in love with and that deserve their own, standalone story, happy ending. I will write that certainly soon. The question of when that is actually going to be for people to read, I don't have an answer yet, but it won't be too long, I hope. Yeah, and that's definitely all the stuff I'm allowed to talk about.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like since you're a trad author, like there's a lot of like things in the works that you like you're not able to talk about. So
And you know what?
things are happening,
Yes.
nobody can know.
I always feel bad when I'm like, oh, I'm not allowed to, because it's not like, Berkeley or like Payne Random House is like, you're gonna be in like author jail if you say these things. It's more so that I just have so little control over, dates, especially for things that are like more than a year away. Dates and timing and what order they come out in. And I think the worst thing you can do is like get a reader excited and tell them something's going to
And then
be.
it not happen.
Yeah. So I mostly am just trying to avoid, saying anything that then I'm like, never mind.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on this author spotlight. I had a it was a delight spending time with
Likewise.
you.
So fun, so fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.